In the free agency frenzy they roam, Josh Jacobs has found a new home. Green Bay's cheers resound as he tears up the ground, scoring touchdowns where Packers' hopes come. And behold, Saquon Barkley takes flight to the Eagles, his future so bright. In Philly's green hue, he'll juke, spin, and break through, leaving defenders in awe of his might. Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar. This is Points on the Board, episode 79. My friends, it's been a little while. I skipped a week there, just got caught up with too much back-end work. We just released our newest podcast, Buzzer Beaters, All Basketball Talk. I'm negotiating or actually speaking with quite a few individuals right now in terms of handling our NFL podcast. So I'm going to talk NFL football this episode. But the truth of the matter is the Points on the Board podcast you are listening to right now will eventually be a political and sports podcast, the intersectionality of sports and politics. It's been around since the dawn of sports. I mean, I'm sure it was a big political hubbub in the first Olympics when the losers got whacked, you know, all that time and effort in the training, and you lose, you can lose a close one, and whack, you know. So certainly there was politics involved in that and getting that change. And we all know Jackie Robinson, you know, it's always been involved, politics and sports, but never on a daily basis like it is right now. And that's what I want this podcast to eventually be. So we're recruiting individuals. Do you have any interest at all? Podcast, we have our NBA team, but we'll talk to others. We're about ready to conclude the NFL search, so it's a process, you know. So this podcast will evolve and will change, but I just wanted to give you a heads up for that. But today we are going to talk NFL. Are we on podcast 79? I believe so. NFL free agency, and we're going to talk running backs today. And I'm like looking desperately for my notes. I thought I had them. I had the last episode. I do a lot of research into these notes, trying to figure out what is the best type of information to bring to you, the audience, to try to give you insights that you don't know about, or some common sense thought processes that people don't want to talk about, whether it's tribalistic, marketing, stats and context. I try to think outside the box to bring you that type of information. So today it's going to be a short podcast. We're going to talk about the NFL free agency and running backs. There's a lot of information still, and we've got a couple of weeks before the draft. We're going to talk about the trades, new rules, break down Stephon Diggs, Rashee Rice. We're going to even talk baseball, so some Shohei Ohtani's first home run as a Dodger and the issues that happened with that. So we've got quite a few episodes coming up in the next 2 weeks, probably two or three. But in the meantime, tonight, we're going to talk free agency. We are going to talk running backs. And please forgive me, I'm going to have to cut this camera off here real quick because I move forward and backwards. And when you do that, the focus tends to get screwed up. 1 second, please, my friend. There we go. That's nice and better. Thank you for that. I've got to learn how not to move, how to sit here in my chair like an anchor. First of all, I want to give a hat tip to The Athletic. Again, I always say this, and I say it chuckling. The Athletic is made up of leftist sports writers. A good chunk of The Athletic's writers, I used to cut checks earlier in their careers. It was fun watching these young Cub reporters grow up into becoming the mainstream reporters. The only downside is they're leftists. You know, they just jump on the gravy train to get on the side of the athletes. I've seen this from the very beginning, whether it was us choosing not to pursue a Jim Trotter because everything with him was race, to working with other black reporters who didn't care about race, they just want to have a good story out, to your traditional white reporters, your older, old school reporters, to your new generation reporters. And it's funny, the new generation reporters are now the older reporters. So it's been quite a journey in dealing with beat reporters. But a lot of these guys are at the Athletic, and Athletic is, to me, the best sports site on the internet. And I've got 30 years of, on a daily basis for hours, breaking down the content, whether it was ESPN, Fox, CBS, or whatnot. When I discovered the Athletic, I was like, oh my gosh. You know, they've got the great game plan, the great thought process in creating what they wanted to create. They need to work on the truthfulness of their political stories, of their political business. That's where they flat out lie to you. But when it comes to the stories of the players, the data, and all that, they're pretty good, spot on. Anything with the political discourse, they're liars. So just be aware of that. I'm able to take what they say in context, and I have actually not run into much, if any, of the political diatribes, even with the Caitlin Clark thing. They report the stories, but stay away from the political diatribe, unlike what ESPN. And I kind of like that. It's very fair. You know, as we all know, Caitlin Clark is hated by a large swath of people of color because she's white. You know, and I'll just say it with Gilbert Arenas. He doesn't like white European players because he says they're taking over the league. And look, over time, this is what happens. Never has there been a permanent spot of one culture owning a sport or industry or whatnot. It's cyclical, you know? And that's an episode unto itself. But a friend of mine did a paper on that. It was fascinating how he was able to find the data on everything needed to prove it. I was like, holy mackerel, you know? Some things are complicated. Some things are simple. There's not a lot of black golfers. Why? How many golf courses do you see them get up? It's easier to put up ribs. You know, there aren't many black baseball players. Well, that's because same concept. And there's an influx of people of color called Latinos, and they've got baseball camps throughout various countries. So some things are common sense. Some things aren't. And I try to give those takes and bring it into you when necessary. But today, it's straight up football. So let's get to it. But first, let me tell you where you can find this podcast. Grumblingsmedia.com is where you can find Points on the Board, Buzzer Beaters, my personal favorite, my fired up conservative podcast. You find our libertarian podcast, Free For All, and our interview show, Big Question with Big John. And again, our podcasts are expanding. So grumblingsmedia.com. You can also find us on YouTube and Rumble under the profile Grumblings Media, as well as your traditional outlets, Spotify, Pandora, Google, and Apple. All righty, so let's get to it. A lot of this news, you already know. I just want to break it out a little bit more. So the first one is what I call my tier one running backs. Saquon Barkley, he got his three-year, $37.8 million contract with about $25.5 million fully guaranteed. Ian Rappaport and Tom Pelissero originally reported that. If Barkley can stay healthy, he'll be the focal point of a team that's already filled with stars. He's a generational talent when he's healthy. And unlike Barry Sanders, look up Barry Sanders' data on grass. You know, people get shocked at that. That was one of my first secrets in fantasy football. But Saquon Barkley can run anywhere. The guy has this ability to dance and juke and make people miss and this blazing speed. Now, he's been injury prone in the NFL, so that's taken a little bit away from that. Now, the Eagles, with their RB committee come to an end. Barkley's a pass-receiving back with breakaway speed, people, which makes him an every-down back. And when you see him off the field, it's likely going to be because he needs to be spelled. They need to monitor his touches, too, because, you know, the kid is injury-prone, so you want to keep him healthy throughout the season. Yeah. So there was a fan's take on Barkley that I thought was pretty funny. You know, Tiki Barber pushed hate towards Barkley. Like, get out of town. You're not a giant. You said you want to be a giant for life. You're not a giant. Yeah. I wish Tiki Barber had that much pride before cheating on his pregnant wife. I don't know if she was pregnant. I think she's pregnant. But he got busted cheating. That's why he got fired from NBC. You know what I mean? Look in the mirror before you throw shade. And what one of the fans responded is, the biggest takeaway for me is how a big twat Tiki Barber is. What an absolute clown. Going on about loyalty from a guy who cheated on his pregnant wife. Scumbag. You got to be careful today when you take pot shots. He came back later and said he was kidding. I don't know. I don't care. I just thought the whole scenario was funny. You know, Tiki, you know, this is the other issue too. It's not like Tiki Barber was the consummate New York Giant. I mean, there are a lot more better players. He was just a quality player, but he did not epitomize what it was to be a New York Giant, at least to me, in my eye. He was just a nice running back, you know. The next player. So I view Saquon Barkley as the top dog. Then you've got Josh Jacobs, who went to the Packers from the Raiders. And obviously, Barkley went from the Giants to the Eagles. And Josh Jacobs went from the Raiders to the Packers. I found that surprising, to be quite honest. We all thought that the Raiders would resign him. But I apologize. Let me shut this off real quick. Okay, so we're talking Josh Jacobs. He signed a four-year, $48 million deal with $12.5 million as a signing bonus and a total of $14.8 million in year one. Again, Rapoport and Pelissero reported that. The only concern is whether head coach Matt LaFleur will give him 20 carries. Not touches, but 20 carries a game. He won't. But we need to see a two-thirds rushing attempts, the one-third pass receiving. The problem with the Green Bay Packers going back to Brett Favre is they never emphasized the rushing attack, which is why this West Coast offense that Green Bay has run for decades, it's been tweaked depending on the head coach, but has only won two Super Bowls, one with Favre, one with Aaron Rodgers. The problem here is you've got Hall of Fame players, top-tier players, and he only had three Super Bowl appearances and two wins over the last 30 years. That's disgusting. And I believe a big reason for that is because they never have had a balanced attack. It's always been pass, pass, pass. And when you become one-dimensional, we see it. Aaron Rodgers, instead of regular season against bad talent, average talent, you know, above average talent. But when you get to the playoffs, we're talking above average wild card teams. To elite teams you're going to be facing if you make it to the championship. And once you get that, that's when Aaron Rodgers falters. You know, his wee-wee shrinks up. You know, you can't be a big dog with average and below average and play against elite and think you're still a big dog. I don't care about all his passing records. I don't care about that stats, you know. I care about how many rings you have. It's an unfair judgment, but that's how you are judged in the NFL in terms of greatness as a quarterback. Again, the concern I have is whether Matt LaFleur will give him 20 carries a game. He will not, but I'd like to see a two-thirds, one-third ratio there in terms of 20 touches per game. He can handle a big load. He had a down season in 2023. Look, the guy held out. You know, he wasn't in shape, then got hurt. It was predictable, and I predicted it. You know, so that season is behind him. He should be good to go. He's got outstanding hands, and again, Saquon, he's a three-down back. What makes him special is he's strong enough and tough enough to rush in between the tackles. People want to know what separates a champion. Look, Patrick Mahomes is special and that defense was special. But Pacheco had a hell of a run as a small back, being able to run people over, to run in between the tackles. Austin Eckler could not. You know, those are the key differences. You know, the Chiefs still probably have to upgrade that position in terms of that. They got Mahomes, so that's their only focus right now. But my point being is, these little third down backs that you're using first, second, and third down, and you're wondering why you're always punting or going for it on fourth down and short yardage, because you got a back that can't get in between the tackles. Josh Jacobs can. His signing scares me as a non-Packers fan because he has immediately elevated that offense. What was funny about all this was Matt LaFleur, the head coach, didn't know what happened. You know, he thought they were going to re-sign Aaron Jones. In fact, I think he even publicly commented on that. But they wanted Aaron Jones to take a pay cut. But he declined and thus was released. Aaron Jones, we're going to talk about him, but he did sign with the Vikings. And the thing here with LaFleur, which is strangely odd in this day and age, is he had no hand in bringing Jacobs in and signing him. And that's probably a good reason why the Packers can't go deep. They don't go deep. They haven't gone to the Super Bowl. These two camps got to work together, management and coaching. And the fact that they signed Josh Jacobs, dumped Aaron Jones, look, that's a no-brainer. But you need to keep your coaching staff informed. And that's a dysfunctional family over there if that happens more often than not. So I view Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs as the top tier of free agent running backs. Tier two, Derrick Henry to the Ravens from the Titans. He signed a 2-year, $16 million contract with a maximum value of $20 million, and that includes $9 million guaranteed. And Rappaport reported that. The Ravens view him as a back that can attack every single lane, meaning they view him as a home run threat from wherever he is on the field. In a press conference, the team said it wouldn't use a run-pass option as much this season because they were asking about Henry, how he fits in, etc. So that was a little bit of insight. And more importantly, he has a rushing quarterback. Look, I'm sorry. Lamar Jackson is improving every year as a passing quarterback. And look, it's the quarterback position. If you can't pass, if you can't go through your regional progressions, you will fail at that position. I don't care how athletic you have it. You can literally count 90 out of 100 times, 95, 98 out of 100 times, how many times the athletic quarterback has eventually failed. You got to learn how to be an actual quarterback. It means you drop back, you go through your reads, and you're able to go deep, and you're able to be accurate. And that's what Lamar Jackson is working on. However, if you're in fantasy, boy, you're loving this because the fact that he's going to be all over the field, Lamar Jackson is going to open up lanes for Derrick Henry. The question is, does he have the nimbleness and quick feet to take advantage of that? He's never worked in that type of offense. He's always been that drop back passer. He follows his blockers, and he's good enough where he's broken it himself. You know, he shed blockers, but he's older now, so those two questions are going to start to arise like that. But regardless, his touchdowns should rise based on the style of offense he's in. My question is, does he have gas in the tank? Look, at the end of the season, his numbers look great. His numbers have fallen, but shockingly, he was the number two rusher in the league last season. I mean, I was stunned at that. And so he kind of breaks the mold. He was number one in attempts, the number two rusher in yardage, number one in attempts, which is 280, and that's about 17 touches per game. God bless that man. That man is taking a pounding. I fear for him as he gets old, but for now, he is earning the moniker King Henry. He's a terrible pass receiver, though, but they don't care as much in the Ravens offense. I think there's no excuse for a running back not to be a pass receiver in this day and age. Same thing with a quarterback. I see no excuse why a quarterback can't scramble to buy time. We live in a different era. So to see a non-pass receiving running back is a big negative. But King Henry has other attributes. This is a much better offense than he had with the Titans. He has a top 10 offense. And again, Lamar Jackson is going to open lanes for him. And Lamar Jackson will be the focal point, but he will be like 2A in this offense. The downside is this. He can break away and take it to the house, but he can also be shut down. 7 games of 50 yards or less. Oh, and or a 3.5 yards per carry or less. So he is literally your boom or bust player. People don't like to talk about that. Oh, King Henry, King Henry, King Henry, King Henry. Well, he looks like a court clown at times too. He can be shut down. So you're not getting the Titans RB from 3, 4, or 5 years ago. He still carries that reputation because of his highlight reel. But at the end of the day, the highlight reels they don't show is about a third of his play stinks and is garbage. That's why he's in tier two. It has nothing to do with him, his quality as a bad human being, etc. It's just he's getting older. The numbers aren't there. Aren't going to be there as well. DeAndre Swift to the Bears from the Eagles. Look, he signed a 3-year, $24 million deal. $15 million guaranteed. Mike Garofalo and Rappaport reported this. He stayed healthy last year, played in all 17 games. However, he was shut down against the better teams down the stretch. In his defense, the Eagles kind of collapsed at that point. His numbers were conflated, too, with 2 games. He had 175 yards in week 2 rushing and 130 yards in week 3, which made him look better than what he actually is. And the Eagles probably recognize that. One reason they likely let him walk, plus the fact that they were able to get Saquon Barkley. He had 6 games, DeAndre Swift, with the Eagles. He had 6 games with 60 yards or less rushing and 5 games with 3.5 yards or less. The league average this past year was 4.1. So he's not elite. He's not a cowbell back. He is a back that can be a pass receiver. So he can be an every down back, but he's just not NFL top tier at the position. Tony Pollard to the Titans from the Cowboys. He signed a 3-year, $24 million contract, Rappaport reported that. According to reports, Titans running back Tony Pollard signed a 3-year, $24 million deal. I said according to reports because there's some conjecture to the details, but we're talking pennies in terms of what how we look at it. So it's not a big story, but per Pro Football Talk, and that's Mike Florio, who's a scumbag. I know Mike Florio when he started. That man stabbed everybody in the back coming up. I told my partner, you deal with him. I'm not going to deal with him. You know, he's a bum. And I hope he comes after me. Doesn't like what I'm saying. You know, hey, I got a lawyer too. You know, but just to let you know, he's not a good guy. But he has built his little Rolodex. And per him, a source with knowledge of the deal says it's 3 years at $21.75 million. And like I said, we're working class folks. 24, 21.7, 22 million. You know, we don't care. His 2023 season was a bust. He was always a timeshare back, and when they made him the bell cow last year, I knew it was going to be failure. You know, he failed. He had career lows in efficiency. And now he's going from the Cowboys' offensive line to the Titans' offensive line, which is horrific when you compare the two. That said, statistically, he's similar to DeAndre Swift, but he lacks some of the explosiveness. He only had 4.0 yards per carry. 2023, the average again was 4.1 yards per carry. He's incapable of carrying the load, but is effective in a committee approach. That said, he'll likely be given the chance to see 2/3 of the touches. You know, so they are expecting things out of him, but they need a back to compliment him. If they get a back to compliment him, they're going to get their money's worth. If not, he's going to fail. I don't want to say he's going to be a bust, but he's not going to put the numbers that people expect. All right. The aforementioned Aaron Jones of the Vikings. He came from the Packers. He signed a 1-year proven deal at $7 million. Rappaport and Pelissero reported that. He'll be the lead back, but he's also approaching 30 years. He had hamstring issues last season, and he missed 6 games. However, when healthy, and he didn't show flashes, he ended the season on a 5-game roll. And when I say a 5-game roll, I'm not exaggerating. His final 3 regular season starts, 21 carries per game. He averaged about 119 yards per game with a 5.7 yards per carry. His 2 playoff appearances, 20 carries per game for an average of 113 yards with 5.8 yards per carry. He is what made Jordan Love a much better quarterback. They finally had a game plan early on before that stretch run. They ended up game planning and not being able to stop him. And his play opened up the ability for Jordan Love to go through his reads, to play with his sloppy mechanics on the back foot, but still throw that strong pass. That's why they wanted Josh Jacobs and why they got him. And because of Aaron Jones' injury history, boom, you're out. He's hitting 30. He's not used much as a pass receiver, but can be a 3-down back. He does have pass receiving skills, but he's not the most trustworthy pass receiver, but serviceable. I think he's going to thrive with the Minnesota Vikings. And I don't think the Packers are going to miss him with Josh Jacobs, but I don't think he's going to miss the Packers either. The Vikings are a team on the rise, despite all the setbacks they've had with free agency and things of that nature. So the next player, Gus Edwards, to the Chargers from the Ravens. Gus Edwards moved into the L.A. Chargers. It's notable because it's a great value and it's a good fit. He has a career average of 4.9 yards per carry, and the Chargers need a strong rushing attack with Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, because that's what he's run first. He's like, run, pass. Run, pass. You know, that's Greg Roman. He signed a 2-year, $6.5 million deal with $3.4 million in guarantees, Tom Pelissero. The Chargers offense coordinator, again, is Greg Roman, who coached him in Baltimore. Edwards is only 28 years old, but he does have about 700 career carries. He has averaged, again, 4.9 yards per carry for his career. Head coach Jim Harbaugh, as Roman, loves to run the ball. So look for him to be the lead back. I don't want to say the cowbell, but he will be given that opportunity to do that. But we're going to have to wait and see. I don't think he'll be able to achieve that. So he'll have somebody to compliment him. He's never carried the load. His rookie season saw 198 touches. That's approximately 12 carries per game. But since then, over the last four, he's only averaged about 10 carries per game. So he's not proven as a bell cow or cow. Bell cow or cow? Oh, it's going to get confused. But look for him to see at worst the same with the goal. They would like to see him accumulate about 12 to 15 carries per game. They're going to wear him out. They're in a rebuild mode, and they're going to use Gus Edwards a lot. I just hope he's able to last career-wise to make it to the big dance, because I believe Jim Harbaugh will get the Chargers into the Super Bowl. Whether they can win or not, I don't know. He wasn't able to win with the 49ers, but he had a strong enough team to go to three straight NFC championships and get to a Super Bowl, and I do expect that with the Chargers. Tier 3, Austin Eckler to the Commanders. He came from the Chargers. Look, a 17-year deal worth up to about $11.43 million. Eckler received a $3 million signing bonus and about $4.8 million in year one of the contract. And that was reported by Tom Pelissero. His contract, I believe he should have waited. It's one of the worst ones I've seen this free agency. But he's older. Maybe he just didn't think he was going to get a nibble. Maybe he's looking forward to being more of a team leader, setting the stage for a transition offense as they do a complete rebuild in Washington. I don't know. Maybe he wants to go coaching afterwards. I don't know. But at his age, 2 years, I would have held out for a little bit more for the right situation, because the Commanders are a complete rebuild. He's not going to compete for a Super Bowl on that team. And maybe teams recognize that you're not an every down back. You're a third down back who maximizes his potential, his value. You overachieve, and God bless him for that. But you're just not the type of back that we want that believe can last the whole season and carry the load at this point in time. And that's how I view him. And he's never been able to run in between the tackles. I get in arguments with my peers all the time. What do you mean, William? That's not how it is anymore. The West Coast offense is a little dump ball pass. That's the equivalent now. It isn't, it isn't. When you're in fourth and one, you know, third and two, you want that running back that can just barrel his way through or in between the tackles. And he can't. He never has been. And a lot of teams are in that situation. That's why you see these coaches taking these shots and then trying to defend them. It's the analytics. Analytics are nothing but tactics in your quiver. Life is built around strategy. You strategize. The team strategizes how they want to attack their opponent. Then the tactics. What weapons are you going to use to attack the opponents, the opponents to implement your strategy? And that's what analytics is. It's a tactic within your strategy. Whew. Again, he can't run in between the tackles. At a press conference, he talked about him and Brian Robinson about bringing someone else in. So it's obvious it's going to be a committee backfield. Specifically, he spoke about his best time was when he was paired with Melvin Gordon in a timeshare. Man, boy, talk about Melvin Gordon. Came in with all the accolades out of college and just kind of fell off the face of the earth. But he'll be the third down back. And with Cliff Kingsbury as the OC, he's like to have plays set up for him and to be taken advantage of. His running back coach is his former head coach, Anthony Lennon. I feel bad for Anthony Lennon, a very nice man. But what a fall from grace for him. Every position he's had since he got fired as the Chargers head coach has been a run, like a coordinator. Then the next one down. Now he's down to RB coach. With the Commanders. I just feel bad for people in those situations, because nothing's ever given that he'll be given another opportunity again. Devin Singletary to the Giants from the Texans, a 3-year, $16.5 million contract. Look, the Giants suck. Me and Big John, my partner, are libertarian here at Grubbly's Media. We don't argue. I just rag on him. Because I'm like, dude, you live in a fantasy land. A reality check. They had no offensive line. I don't care if you're God. I don't care if you're Joe Montana, Patrick Mahomes, Steve Young, Randall Cunningham, Michael Vick, all these great mobile QBs, as well as these drop back quarterbacks with ice in their veins. If you don't have an offensive line, you're going to be on your back. Just like David Carr was with the Texans for years as the most sacked quarterback. Just as Sam Howell was with 85 sacks on the Commanders. You don't have an offensive line, you're going to suck. And I'm not a defender of Daniel Jones, but my take is, hey, it's easy to blame Jones. First off, Jones was overpaid. That stunned me. But at the end of the day, the guy has never had a fair opportunity to be a quarterback in the NFL. You can blame the quarterback all you want, but there's no O-line. And what's this have to do with Singletary? You don't have an O-line, you're going to suck as a running back, too. You know, he's not going into a worse situation. The Texans overachieved last season. Their O-line was injured, beat up. It wasn't a very good O-line, and he was inconsistent. You got to look at the numbers in context. And as a comparison, though, the Giants were 30th ranked in the league, the 30th ranked offensive line in the league. Now, this is subjective. There really is no clear statistic to rank in the terms where you can look out five, because players come in, come out, they're hurt, different O-lines during the season. But overall, they were ranked 30th. The Texans were ranked 27th. So Singletary is going to a similar situation. I just don't think he's a very good back in terms he's coming from a team that overachieved. He will likely be part of a committee and look for the offense to become even more Bills-centric in terms of the passing versus rushing. Zach Moss to the Bengals from the Colts. He signed a 2-year, $8 million contract that includes $4.5 million in year one. Pelissero reported that. He'll play the role of an underused back in a committee approach with the Colts. Chase Brown will see his share of carries and passing downs, too. Moss proved himself in 2023 when Jonathan Taylor was out. Again, he was the backup. He even saw his share of carries still keep going up when Taylor returned. Now, you have to take that in context. Taylor was out of shape, injured. The guy had had about a year, minimum, of the bad play. So he had to rebuild himself. And eventually, Taylor usurped and took back his role. But Zach Moss proved himself a good enough backup. There was a clear drop-off, but his versatility helped close the gap in the drop-off of talent. So look for him to be part of a committee with the Bengals. The problem with the Bengals is Zach Taylor thinks he's God's gift to passing. You know, when they involved Joe Mixon and were balanced, they were studs. When they didn't involve Joe Mixon in the passing deck, put it all on Burrow, it wasn't a given. The Super Bowl is the clearest example of that. I'm not a fan of these whiz kid coaches who come in and never learn how to be a leader. They just know one aspect, and they screw it up. There's a reason the Rams have won one Super Bowl. There's a reason Zach Taylor has only gone to one Super Bowl. There's a reason these coaches don't have consistency. Greatness from a head coach comes when you have different teams. Say you have one quarterback from one era, then you shift to another one. Or different line, different head coaches, different players. When you take two different teams, even though it's the same team, and you go one Super Bowl, that's greatness in the coaching ranks. When you can only do it once, with one set of teams, that's not greatness. That's just you have a great core group of players and you weren't such a bleep up to cause them to lose. So I don't see Zach Taylor ever winning the Super Bowl until he matures and understands the concept of a balanced offense. Keep your quarterback healthy and a defense off balance. Tier 4, Deonta Foreman. To the Browns, he's coming from the Bears. But Foreman makes sense as a bargain bin standout for Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb's obviously recovering from a season-ending injury, and they don't know if he's going to be able to come back. He has multiple surgeries to repair the knee damage, which obviously includes that torn ACL. So it's unclear when Chubb will come back and if he can ever play again. Foreman will likely split the carries with Jerome Ford until Chubb is back. And if not, look for them to bring another back in and to create a timeshare situation. Cordarrelle Patterson to the Steelers. He comes from the Falcons. Look, he's useless as a running back. He's pretty much useless as a receiver. He's a good, versatile player, but he's not top tier at it. What he's top tier at is as a special team return man. He signed a 2-year, $6 million deal. He has zero fantasy value except as a defensive team special teams, meaning he gives the Steelers defensive team special teams value in your fantasy league. His signing is more than likely due to the new NFL rules dealing with kickoffs. And the new rules will likely see some great highlight reel plays, but nothing is a given. He's a dual threat in both rushing and receiving, and sometimes lines up in the halfback slot. So look for him with trick plays. The Steelers have never been really known for that, but I can see some of that happening. It's just a well-known name who signed, and if the NFL kickoff rules had not changed, I wouldn't have even mention him. Now, Arthur Smith, his former head coach with the Falcons, is now the offensive coordinator. And again, look for him to be used in some trick plays. Antonio Gibson to the Patriots from the Commanders. Signed a 3-year, $11.25 million contract that includes $5.3 million guaranteed. Ian Rappaport and Tom Pelissero reported that. Look, in 16 games, Gibson had 113 touches, 654 yards, and 3 touchdowns, 473 offensive snaps, all career lows. So I'm not sure what the Patriots think they're getting. He's also a former wideout converted into a running back. He's never reached the 3-down ceiling they thought he could reach, you know, hoping to transform him into a 3-down back. And at best, he's a committee approach guy and a potentially phenomenal third down backs. And that's how the teams play. They vote the King Henrys of the world are the exception. You know, it's like quarterbacks. The game has changed. You know, there was a time when you had the bell cow RB was a given. A quarterback had to be able to read the defense because he had to call his plays. The game's much easier and much more specialized today versus the old days. I'm not sure this is a good signing, but there you have it. And those are the main signings for these running backs. And again, I look at Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs. If you're in fantasy, you want to make sure you grab those two guys. I see Aaron Jones as a dark horse, depending on how they plan to use him. I see Derrick Henry is probably overrated going into your fantasy drafts. So he has great value if you can get him at the right time, at the right slot. I'm not a DeAndre Swift fan. I'm not a Tony Pollard fan. I'm a Gus Edwards fan, but I'm keeping it real. I'm not an Austin Eckler fan. If you're in a point per reception league, he has some value there, but he's in the twilight of his career. I'm not a Devin Singletary, not a Zach Moss fan when it comes to, and a D'Onta Foreman fan, nor a Cordarrelle Patterson fan when it comes, or Antonio Gibson fan when it comes to fantasy. But these are your major signings for the NFL running back position. And after I run through the wide receivers in the next few days, and then I break out the other players, tight ends, defensive players, I'll fill it in with new signings and things of that nature. But that's what you got for your running back situation. Some good moves made by some teams that have actually elevated their value. I think the Packers are now, I don't want to say a favorite, but they can compete now. They can compete with anybody right now. I think the Ravens with Derrick Henry, as much as I kind of poo-pooed him, and I didn't poo-poo him because I don't like him. I poo-pooed him because everybody thinks you're getting the King Henry from a few years ago. You're not. But Derrick Henry in this offense, he has great fantasy value, I believe. So those are some of your players from a fantasy perspective. And, again, my podcast is more general sports. That will eventually become general sports and how politics ties into it, and our NFL team will go deep into the details with you. But I think I bring a lot to the table, so do not sit there and ignore me. For those of you that may not realize, back in the 90s and into the early 2000s before I sold the company, I was one of the preeminent fantasy sports players in the league. And I was seen as an insider by some simply because of how good we were at gathering information, and being a small company, that tended to make me look better than I was because we had over 30 some odd reporters all feeding me, you know. And I chose not to go that route. I came up with the Adam Kaplans, the Jay Glazers of the world, but that wasn't my shtick. Sometimes I look back at it, I'm like, man, maybe I should have made that my shtick, you know. But I'm a little different beast. I remember a corporate VP once told me, William, you go work in the corporate environment, they're going to fire you in 2 weeks because you're a why guy. And that's great for entrepreneurship and learning and teaching, but not in the corporate world. And it's true. Look at ESPN. If you speak your mind and you speak fairly about politics and the tribalism that we're dealing with today, they don't want you to do that. They fire you or castigate you or write you up. Look at Sage Steele. But, man, if you throw out the leftist talking points, which are always easily defeated, especially when you're talking about dumb jocks, you know, but ESPN doesn't allow that. They know their guys get crushed when they actually start talking facts. So they're just out with the narrative, progressive crap. You know, and maybe that's why I like The Athletic as the best sports site. They keep that to a minimum. You know. But anyway, There you got it, my friends. I want to thank you for listening once again to the podcast. I need you to share the podcast. I need you to help redistribute it. And where you can find the podcast, once again, is at Grumlies Media. You'll find the Points on the Board podcast, along with our Buzzer Beaters, our NBA podcast, and we have also political and entertainment podcasts. My other favorite is the Red, White, and Rude, where I talk entertainment. You can find those at grumliesmedia.com, as well as YouTube and Rumble under the profile handle Grumlies Media, and your traditional podcast outlets, Spotify, Pandora, Google, and Apple. Thank you, my friends, as always. And I will be back sooner than later. And until then, my friends, I bid you adieu.